This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehisu Heap, coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The deal's survival, however, is not assured, and the Congolese Catholic Church, the increasingly frustrated mediator of the talks, says the two sides have until Saturday to reach a consensus on the makeup of the new government and how to implement the rest of the agreement.
That's William Klaus reporting from Kinshasa. Details coming up.
Also, female genital mutilation is blamed for shattering the lives and hopes of many young girls. And over 100 escaped rebels from the DRC have been returned to their demobilization camps in western Uganda.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, political parties in the DRC signed a deal on New Year's Eve that eased the political crisis after deadly unrest over delayed elections. But now that agreement risks falling apart as the two sides wrangle over its implementation. And observers say they are running out of time if they are to have any hope of holding the polls this year. William Clowes has been following the talks for VOA in Kinshasa and reports.
The December 31st deal demands the polls be held by the end of this year and keeps President Joseph Kabila in office until then. In the accord, Kabila's political alliance agreed that Kabila will not seek a third term, though some in Congo still fear the president means to change the constitution so he can do just that. The agreement provides for a new government led by a prime minister from the largest opposition platform, the Rassemblement. The deal's survival, however, is not assured, and the Congolese Catholic Church, the increasingly frustrated mediator of the talks, says the two sides have until Saturday to reach a consensus on the makeup of the new government and how to implement the rest of the agreement. Christophe Lutundula, a senior Rassemblement politician, told VOA they expect to make the deadline.
Tout ce qu'on a entendu depuis la signature de l'accord, de la part de nos partenaires,
he says what we have seen from the other side since the signing of the accord does not incite a blissful optimism. But, he says, the Rassemblement remains vigilant and committed to finding a solution. For its part, the ruling alliance has denounced the Rassemblement for wanting to impose a prime minister upon the president. It argues that the opposition must present Kabila with five options. Even if the two sides do agree on a new government this weekend, experts say organizing nationwide polls by the end of this year will be difficult. The Democratic Republic of Congo is a vast and poorly connected country, and public finances are particularly strained at the moment, largely due to the global dip in commodity prices since 2014. Experts say the new government will need to muster rapid international support to fund the elections. In December, the president of the Electoral Commission estimated that the full electoral package will cost $1.8 billion. In October, the Constitutional Court authorized the delay of the polls, which were scheduled for November, because the commission said it needs to redo the voter register. The work has begun, but it is a massive undertaking, expected to take until at least the end of July. William Clowes for VOA News, Kinshasa.
Over 100 former Democratic Republic of Congo M23 rebels have been returned to their demobilization camps in western Uganda after their failed attempt to escape last week. Kampala is now looking for a way to improve security to prevent future escapes. Catherine Nambi reports.
Earlier reports of the regrouping of the Democratic Republic of Congo DRC M23 rebel outfit in Uganda was simply brushed off by the Ugandan government as mere alarmist until last Saturday, when weapons were found in a vehicle with Ugandan registered number plates hidden in a bush along the Uganda-DRC Bunagana border post. According to South Uganda Regional Police spokesperson Eli Mate, the weapons, including 6 submachine guns, a PK rifle, 5 magazines, and 79 bullets, were impounded during a Saturday night patrol at the border, but the suspects fled the scene into DRC on seeing Uganda police patrol.
When they approached the place on finding out what was being loaded, they found there were guns. These guns are 6 ICMG rifles with 1 PK. And all the ICMG rifles had ammunitions with them, but the PK didn't have ammunitions. We are trying to make all efforts to trace those who were behind these guns and maybe the source. Because these totally, they are Ugandan. They look Ugandan guns, and we want to find out the source and all of those who were behind it. I want to call on our people that whoever may be having information that can lead us to all of these should volunteer to police, because at the end of it, we shall all celebrate the achievement of impounding these guns. We don't know where they were heading and for which purpose.
Speaking to the media in Kampala, the Uganda police spokesperson, Andrew Felix Kawesi, admitted that given the nature of the recovered weapons, Uganda police is to investigate whether the weapons could be linked to the M23 rebels.
We are suspecting, because these are many guns, including a machine gun. Ordinary criminals may not use such huge consortium of arms. And we are just thinking aloud that maybe there could be M23 elements that were maybe crossing to Uganda to do some regrouping, all running out from Congo. So investigations are still going on.
To establish the origin and destination of the weapons, the Uganda police and Ugandan army have deployed at the Bunagana border post under screening whoever enters and exits Uganda to avert any possible infiltration by any member of the rebel outfit. Shafik Sekandi is the resident district commissioner of one of the border districts, Kisoro, in southwestern Uganda.
That area is still deployed. We are also monitoring other areas the way we used to monitor our borderline. And we have also talked to the Wananchi. We are asking them to continue being vigilant and keep reporting. You know, there's a lot of insurgency in Congo. There are many fighting groups in Congo, the Mai Mai, the FDR, and then the ADF. So we can't know who's responsible for these firearms which we are entering into our country. I have already invited the liaison officer of Congo, Lieutenant Colonel Dede. We have taken him to police. He has also witnessed, and we have asked DR Congo security also to be alert.
The M23 rebels have been staying in Uganda's camps for demobilized fighters after their defeat by United Nations and DRC forces, and the consequent signing of a ceasefire agreement in 2013. However, on Sunday 15th January 2017, DRC authorities reported that the rebels had entered DRC from Uganda and took over a village in North Kivu province of DRC, which reports Uganda government denied. For VOA, this is Catherine Nambi reporting from Kisoro district in southwestern Uganda.
As the world continues with a global campaign to end female genital mutilation, Kenyan campaigners and survivors say the often deadly ritual has shattered the lives and hopes of many young girls. From the Kenyan town of Kajiado, Ruben Chama reports.
Mary, 13, is among more than 100 survivors sheltered at Ibisil Boarding Primary School at the heart of Kajiado. The area is home to the Maasai, nomadic pastoralist community found in Kenya's central and southern Rift Valley. She underwent female circumcision or female genital mutilation 4 years ago. The procedure, also called FGM, was performed by her own parents.
Na miaka 13, mimi ni mwanafunzi. Babangu alinikujia, nikaenda nyumbani. Aliomba ruhusa kwa walimu na nikaenda nyumbani.
I'm 13 years old and I'm a student. My dad sought permission from my teachers from school to allow me go home.
Nilipofika saa 3 ya usiku, walinikamata bila kuniambia chochote, wakanikeketa.
I went home and at around 9 p.m. that night, my parents forced me to undergo the cut.
Lucy Itore, the school's deputy headmistress, started the center about a year ago to provide a safe haven for many girls within the community who face the threat of undergoing FGM.
This December holiday, we've rescued over 30 girls. Some of them have gone through the cut, through the help of the county commissioner, and the assistant county commissioner Ilbisil area, they have really helped her to rescue many girls in this area. So FGM is still loud here, and a lot of sensitization is needed, a lot of empowerment in school. We train them to say no to FGM because FGM is the key to early marriage. If you have not gone through FGM, then it is very hard for your parents to marry you off.
Lucy's program is unique as she goes into the villages with policemen to rescue girls from FGM and early forced marriages. So far, she has saved more than 140 girls who are now under our care within the school compound. The deputy head teacher says, unlike many girls from our community, she was lucky herself to escape the cut as well as get a chance to attend school.
I was lucky that my parents took me to school. They educated me up to high school. But immediately after high school, we disagreed with my father because he wanted to marry me off. So I ran away and went to my uncle. I was lucky to have an educated uncle in Nairobi. I ran up to his place and then he rescued me. Lucky enough, I did an interview and I was lucky to join a teacher's training college. And that's how I became a teacher. But when I was employed by the government, I also thought very hard that I need to go back and give back to the society because somebody somewhere, my uncle, helped me.
Campaigners call the deadly practice mutilation rather than the term female circumcision so as to make clear the dangers it involves. Penina Tombo, a retired nurse and a female rights activist, explains the intense pain and damage caused to the young girls during the ritual cut, still a common practice among the Maasai community where she comes from.
We don't have a home ourselves, but we stay with the girls until we get a center to take them, either AIC, BSIL, and if they're in secondary school, we take them to secondary schools. When they close the school, they come back to us. Since we started, we have rescued more than 150. At the moment, we have 50. And it's a bit hard because you have to look for school fees, for the personal use things, and you know they are girls.
Tombo underwent genital mutilation at the age of 11. She was devastated. Today, she spends most of her time helping Maasai girls escape the ritual cut and forced early marriage, and instead helps them enroll in school to get education. However, she says it's not an easy task.
When we started, I was just about to be killed because I rescued four girls and the stepfather, he was wondering why should I rescue the girls instead of them being married off. He thought of killing me, but I thank God I was not killed and the girls now are somewhere, they are doing something. It is not an easy job. Mm. You have to sacrifice yourself. It is either death and life, but because you want to do something which was also done to you.
Kenya outlawed FGM in 2011 with practitioners punishable by a minimum 3-year jail term or fine or life imprisonment if the procedure causes death. More than 125 million women have been mutilated in 29 countries in Africa and the Middle East, according to the World Health Organization, WHO, which condemns the practice as a violation of human rights among women. While illegal in multiple nations, FGM continues to be carried out in secret, often in basic conditions without any painkillers, as Lucy Itore explains.
In the Maasai community, FGM is still happening. But what is happening now, they are doing it silently. Girls are taken through FGM at night. We had a case of a girl I rescued 4 years down the line. And when she was, the parents pretended that they have reconciled with the girl. And when they took her home, they went and took her through the cut. So this is very painful. It was very painful to cope, keeping them in a rescue center for 4 years, making sure she's comfortable. And within a twinkle of an eye, she has gone through FGM.
Many Kenyan tribes continue the practice, sometimes leading to death from blood loss or infection, as well as lingering complications. But courageous women like Lucy Itore and Penina Tombo are determined to stop the brutal ritual. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Kajiado, Kenya.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhi. 20 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. A deal signed by political parties in the Democratic Republic of Congo risks falling apart as the two sides wrangle over its implementation. And female genital mutilation is blamed for shattering the lives and hopes of many young girls in Kenya. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
In one of his first TV interviews at the White House, President Donald Trump told ABC that his plan to restrict entry visas to people from some Muslim countries is not a Muslim ban. Instead, he said it's a plan to protect the U.S. from potential threats emanating from countries that have tremendous terror. But Muslim Americans are worried that they could be singled out. Mohammed Al-Shanawi has more.
President Trump says the United States has enough problems without allowing people to come in who in many cases, or in some cases, are looking to do tremendous destruction.
You're looking at people that come in many cases, in some cases, with evil intentions. I don't want that. They're ISIS. They're coming under false pretense. I don't want that.
President Trump says he wants to avoid the security threats encountered by European countries that welcomed Syrian refugees.
I'm going to be the president of a safe country. We have enough problems. Now, I'll absolutely do safe zones in Syria for the people. I think that Europe has made a tremendous mistake by allowing these millions of people to go into Germany and various other countries. And all you have to do is take a look. It's a disaster what's happening over there.
President Trump says he doesn't want that to happen in the United States and criticized the Obama administration for allowing in tens of thousands of Syrian refugees. He said the FBI is now investigating more people than ever before with potential links to terror. President Trump says United States authorities will use extreme vetting to avoid allowing potential terrorists into the country. Trump supporters say those coming from countries that have produced large numbers of Islamic radicals and terrorists would receive special scrutiny. Some Trump supporters have suggested a national registry for Muslims in the United States, though his choice of Attorney General, Senator Jeff Sessions, says he opposes the idea. Nahad Awad, Executive Director of Council on American-Muslim Relations, says he nevertheless fears the possibility of a registry, which he says could target U.S. Muslims.
He's attempting to deprive Muslim refugees from coming to the United States because of their faith. We believe that this is unconstitutional, and also his threat to conduct a Muslim registry is going to be unconstitutional. So we predict that he may implement some of these threats, and they may become policies, but we are certain that we're going to fight back using all the legal tools that we have.
Under a 1990 law, immigrants cannot be barred from the United States on ideological grounds. But another law allows the president to keep out any class of people that are considered to be detrimental to the interests of the United States. Human rights activists say they are against any laws that discriminate against refugees or visitors to the United States based on religion. But many security advocates say ideas under consideration do not single out all Muslims, but are simply sensible ways to prevent a potential terrorist from entering the United States. Mohammed Al-Shinawi, VOA News, Washington.
Nigeria's government is taking control over a valuable oil block. It had been awarded to Shell and the Italian company Eni because of suspected corruption in the original grant to the companies. The government has already filed fraud and money laundering charges against two former Nigerian government officials and a businessman. The temporary transfer of assets and operations stem from a 2011 deal in which Shell and Eni paid more than $1 billion into an escrow account in London for the rights to develop oil on Block 245. Industry specialists say it could hold more than 9 billion barrels of oil. The Nigerian government, though, got only a fraction of the money. Much of it was distributed by then Justice Minister Dan Etete, who is now facing corruption charges, along with former Justice Minister Mohamed Bello Adiko and businessman Aliyu Abubakar. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhibi in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, howdy buddy. This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in this Sunday for an awesome hour of African music, music news, and culture. David Vandy, host of VOA's African Beat, joins me this time. We listen to new Sierra Leonean bobo music together. You'll also hear 1970s benga music and Congolese rumba that you forgot you love.
Oh yeah, Africa, I can't forget where I come from. Africa, my mother, will you listen to my song? I love you, Africa, this to you.
Don't miss it. This Sunday, 1500 and 2000 UTC right here on Music Time in Africa.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Barty here to remind you that February is Black History Month here in the United States. And starting Wednesday, February 1st, and continuing throughout the month, we will begin our Black History Month and daily quiz series on Daybreak Africa. Listen every morning as we profile historical African Americans and African individuals and events. Send us your country's historical moment in February. You can win special VOA goodies by answering one of our daily Black History questions. Please send your answers to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. You can also call us on 202-205-9942. We will select a winner each morning from among the correct answers.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
How much do you know about HIV, the virus that causes AIDS? Do you know that you cannot get HIV from toilet seat or a drinking glass? HIV is transmitted through blood and bodily fluids, primarily through sexual contact. One way to protect yourself if you are sexually active is to be sure to use a condom. Condoms can reduce the risk of getting or transmitting HIV by up to 98%.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The lyrics
could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic, etc.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America, Mondays through Fridays, 0900 and 2000 Universal Time,
with David Bandy.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop.